Thanks for tuning in to Public Radio KDNK. This is the Living Permaculture Show. My name is Stephanie Sison. Jerome is not with us today, but we do have one of our favorite guests, Adam Brock, here on the show. Welcome, and thanks for joining us, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So I would love to talk about a few things with you today, a general update on what you're up to, because you definitely have a lot of different projects going on. But specifically, two main things I wanted to talk about is your new position as the Western Program Director for the National Young Farmers Coalition, which is very exciting to all of us who know you and know the organization. And I think that's just a very sweet pairing, as well as the Crimpy Permaculture Design Course that's starting here on July 15th, so really soon. So those are the two main points, but I'd love to hear anything else you have exciting going on that I maybe am not aware of as well.
Well, I'm sure just those two things will be plenty to keep us busy.
No doubt, always is. Give me a little update. We've talked on the air before about the National Young Farmers Coalition with some of our local chapter members, but I'd love an update as to what the Western Program Director does and just the organization in general, why it's important or what you guys are up to these days.
Yeah, well, I'll start there and then kind of zoom into to what we're doing here in the West. So overall, National Young Farmers Coalition works to educate, mobilize, and organize young farmers across the country to make sure that we have a future where anybody, you know, just coming out of college can get on a farm and make a viable career out of it. So what that looks like is we have over 40 chapters across the states, including one in the Roaring Fork Valley. We work closely with the people, the leaderships in those chapters, to run events and kind of organize them and have fun together. And then we also do a lot of work on advocacy and policy. So certainly the members in the chapters, but also members who are unaffiliated with the chapter, who are just anywhere in the country, we work with them to tell their story to legislators, to help come up with policy, whether that's on the local level, at the city level, or even all the way up to the federal level. And some of our members are even now running for office themselves. So kind of anything we can do to help give young farmers a bigger voice and break down the barriers to them doing their work well. So that's what we do as an organization. And, you know, it's been around for just about 10 years and has really made some rapid strides in building power among young farmers in the country. So starting with the Farm Bill in 2014, and then also most recently with the one that was just passed about 6 months ago, we've had some pretty significant policy wins in D.C. And have been able to get some ideas that came from our members into the most recent Farm Bill to help what they do. And then we've also, in the last few years, been pretty successful in passing state policies in Minnesota, New Mexico, here in Colorado. We passed one a couple years ago around workforce development, so to get paid apprentices on farms. That's the big picture. In the West, I feel very fortunate to be following in the footsteps of Kate Greenberg, who kind of kick-started the Western program for NYSC and was really one of the kind of core organizers for the organization. And the reason that position came open is she was tapped by our new governor, Jared Polis, to be the agriculture commissioner for the state of Colorado. So she's basically in charge of Colorado Department of Ag now after having worked on behalf of young farmers for 5-6 years. She did a great job of kind of connecting with all kinds of organizations throughout the state, helping set up the 5 chapters that we have in Colorado, as well as some in New Mexico, and getting some work going on the ground in California. So I'm kind of inheriting all of that. I started about 3 months ago and have been hitting the ground running, you know, getting to know all of the chapters, understanding, you know, the work we've already been doing, both in terms of the programs and the policies we're involved with, A couple big things that I'm excited to share are that we'll have our national gathering that the organization does every year, happens to be in Colorado this year. It's going to be in Boulder, and we're going to be bringing over 100 farmers from across the country to Boulder to connect with each other and to do some training with them on how to run chapters, how to be even better advocates for policy change, things like that. We'll be doing some farm tours, and I'm definitely hoping to get some good representation from folks in the Roaring Fork at that event. That's November 11th through 13th. And then the other thing kind of policy-wise that we're working on is bringing together a whole group of people from all different backgrounds and ideologies and farm sizes across the state to talk about how we can improve the health of our state's soils. So, you know, there's already work happening through state and local conservation boards to help people improve their soils. But, you know, as you know, with things like climate change and drought, you know, there's so many reasons to be putting more effort into things like cover cropping and rotational grazing and any number of other things that might manage soils a little bit better. So we just had our first meeting of that group just a couple days ago, and that's going to be meeting ongoing. And the idea is to eventually come up with statewide programs, whether that is more things at Colorado Department of Ag or a policy that we pass through the legislature next year, or, you know, anything else, whatever we can do to, as a big tent, help make sure that our soils stay healthy and get even healthier.
And so just to dial in real close, what in your experiences thus far are some of the best things to rebuild soil from a farmer's perspective? I could chime in too, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the first thing I'll say, because I wouldn't be a good permaculturalist if I didn't, is it depends. you know, everything is so dependent on how much moisture you're getting in that bioregion, what the current health of the soil is, how much acreage you're working with. But overall, in general, you know, a few things is that making sure that the soil is covered as much as possible, ideally by something living. So even if you're, you know, letting a field fallow, planting a cover crop, for example, there's ways to manage animals on the land that are really depleting of the soil. And a lot of kind of old school grazing patterns have really robbed the soil of nutrients. On the other hand, there's lots of ways to do it that regenerate the soil. And there's a lot of innovation around that happening over the last few years and decades.
Oh, I got you breaking up a little bit, Adam. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there we are.
In your life as a farmer, Steph, what have you found has worked well for improving the health of your soils?
Sure. Well, this is a topic that we were just talking about. I was teaching out at Sonic Bloom for their kind of pre-academy session before the actual festival began, and they have a permaculture course, and soils, of course, are part of that conversation and a huge part. And at its sustainable settings, Brooke and Rose are very quoted as saying, of all the things that they farm, what they're really farming is soil, and everything else is easy after that. And so in the course, we were talking about the difference between nutrient mining and nutrient cycling. So we're growing all these crops, we're growing hay or beef that's grazing on the grass, or we're growing, you know, lettuce crops for our CSA or whatever it is that we're doing as farmers. And all of that is taking nutrients out of the soil in some aspect. And we have somewhat separated in lots of agriculture how that nutrient gets back into the soil. And a lot of that's through manures or green manures, which are plants and things like that. So, and you touched on it a second ago with proper crop rotation, taking time for these fields that we're working to have a break for a year or two or more, where we're growing crops that actually feed the soil, and then also bringing those manures back to the field. I know a lot of cattle operations that have this great resource of manure that's coming out of these animals, and it just gets piled up somewhere and becomes a waste product instead of where it's intended to go, which is back on the land. And at Sustainable, we have seen over the years working with NRCS and the soil tests that we've done that we can improve the nutrition and the organic matter and everything about the soil by integrating the animals in a really directed and precise way that mimics how nature did it before we started kind of messing with it. But lots of fun stuff. And it's really, I think, just changing your mindset of you're just taking and thinking about if we're taking, like any relationship, we need to give back.
Yeah, for sure. It's been amazing for me to see in my years visiting sustainable settings, all of the incredible things it's done and how that land has evolved through the practices that you were just describing. I certainly hope that as this coalition that we're starting to build continues to gain momentum, that we can use some of the work that Brooke and everyone else there has done as an example for others to see.
For sure. So if anyone's around and you haven't been to sustainable settings, come on out. But I would love to hear what programs currently exist in the West or larger for young farmers. And what is a young farmer anyway?
Yeah, that's an important question. So we really see young farmers, we define that pretty broadly. There's no age limit to a young farmer. You know, it might be easier to think of it as a beginning farmer. So anybody who has, you know, say 10 years or less experience on the land and who is trying to make a living from the land, whether that is through growing vegetables and fruits or growing herbs as you are, or, you know, growing hemp for fiber, you know, any of those things count in our book. And we're always happy to work with folks that are just starting to get on the land. In terms of programs, you know, a lot of what we see is, you know, ourselves as National Young Farmers Coalition, other than the chapters themselves, we do a couple programs ourselves specifically for young farmers around things like food safety. You know, like I mentioned, we do some advocacy training, but we're not really ones that do the actual training for farmers or provide, you know, technical assistance. But what we do is help connect young farmers with information about those programs. So, you know, they vary on a state level, but there's lots of federal programs from the Farm Bill. Some of them, you know, like I was mentioning, that are in there specifically because of the advocacy of the people in our network that are designed to help young farmers, for example, get low-interest loans if they're trying to buy farmland or to upgrade or update their irrigation or, you know, implement any other practices that will help conserve natural resources. There's something called the EQIP grant, EQIP, that is designed to help with conservation practices. So yeah, a lot of what we do is basically connect the farmers who, you know, for good reason might not know about all of this labyrinth of USDA programs to the things that might actually be most useful for them.
Awesome. Yeah, I know it's almost a second job just to find the grants that you might be available to apply for. So having someone to connect you and call and talk to that can lead you in the right direction can be a huge time saver. So that's a great resource to have. What would, just to put this right out for anyone who on that note is interested, how can we get this information? Who do we talk to? Which website or phone number?
Yeah. So certainly on our own website, youngfarmers.org, there's a lot of information about that. Also locally, you know, I know you have a chapter in the Roaring Fork Valley, and there's contact info for that chapter on our website. So you can find when the next chapter meeting is, and the leadership of that chapter is pretty well plugged into those programs and can point you in the right direction of people to ask about more. And I'm certainly always happy to field questions myself, and folks can reach me at adam@youngfarmers.org.
Awesome. Could you update us? You mentioned a couple new policy wins. What are a couple new policy wins that we can look forward to?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm most excited about is that the amount of the maximum amount that people can qualify for one of those farmer loans to get access to land was raised to $600,000, which, you know, as you know from living in Colorado, is, even that number is kind of small for buying land here.
Sure.
But it was raised from, I think, $300,000, which, you know, is almost impossible these days in a place like the Roaring Fork Valley to buy anything that's usable land for that much. So that was one of them. There's actually, we wrote a blog post on our website that has a whole list. I think there's a dozen or so different wins. There's going to be a new office of urban agriculture to support people who are doing farming in the city. There's going to be a new and beginning farmer coordinator for every single state that's going to be appointed, that's going to be like a USDA employee, and their entire job is going to be connecting new and beginning farmers with resources like I was just talking about. So yeah, those I think are some of the biggest ones, but there's a whole laundry list and a blog post on our website.
Awesome.
And I'd be happy to send that to you to make available to listeners.
That would be great. So we are going to try to wrap up a couple minutes early because I know you have another appointment, but we have 8 minutes or so left to keep chatting. You are listening to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We're here with Adam Brock from the National Young Farmers Coalition, among many other things. For the last few minutes, I'd love to chat about the Crimpy PDC, the permaculture design course that you are coming down to lead here very shortly, just in a couple weeks, which we're really excited to have you out. So I'd love, is there any room left in case anybody listening wants to join in on this amazing 2-week course?
Yeah. You know, I think there are just a couple spots left. We're getting pretty full. We've had a lot of interest, as we always do, but there are a couple spots left. And, you know, I got to say, this is one of my favorite things to do every year. I'm honored to have been the teacher at this course for almost 10 years now. And it's been going for over 30 years. It's one of the longest running permaculture courses in the entire country, if not the entire world. It's just, you know, such a magical place, the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. And the experience of going through a permaculture design course is, you know, I don't think it's exaggeration to say it's life-changing for most of the people that go through it. And so for me to be the facilitator and to be guiding people through that transformative experience year after year is just so inspiring. It's going to be fun. As always, we're going to do lots of hands-on activities, lots of work, certainly in Jerome's forest garden and in his greenhouse. But also, you know, a misconception that a lot of people have when they're first getting introduced to permaculture is that it's just about forest gardens, or that it's just about, you know, chicken tractors or this technique or that technique. And some of my favorite lessons from the permaculture course is how we're able to show people that even more so than any one specific technique in the farm or in the garden, it's really a whole way of life. It's a whole way of solving problems. That can be beneficial even if you're never interested in growing food or don't have a green thumb. So I definitely encourage folks, whether they are actively farming or just interested in a shift in perspective, to check out the Crimpy website and to sign up for the course if they're able.
And for a lot of our listeners know what permaculture is because we've been talking about it for a while, but in case there's anyone tuning in that hasn't listened to us before, what the heck is permaculture and why would you take a permaculture course? What is a permaculture course?
Yeah, totally. So my definition of permaculture is meeting human needs while restoring ecosystem health. That's a colleague of mine, Rafter Sass Ferguson, came up with that. And, you know, it's short and sweet. But it's basically saying permaculture is a way of viewing the world that allows us to meet our needs of, you know, certainly growing our own food, but also of shelter and of community and of meaning, to do all of those things in a way that isn't just less bad. You know, I feel like sustainability is about being less bad. It's about doing less harm, shrinking our footprint, but that's actively regenerating, replenishing the ecosystems around us. Increasing biodiversity, improving that topsoil that we were talking about earlier. That's how I define permaculture. And then the permaculture design course is you know, generally the initiation ceremony for people to become part of that mindset and that world. So it's been offered around the world in hundreds of places, a pretty standard 72-hour curriculum for about 30 years. And it's basically a survey course. So, you know, we don't get into too much detail about anything, but we blow people's minds in a lot of different areas, just kind of talking about, everything from how to harness water to how to read the landscape and, you know, just look a mountainside and understand that there was a forest fire there 30 years ago and what it's going to look like in 30 more years, to, you know, like I mentioned, some of those social characteristics of how does this intersect with things like social justice or running a meeting or anything that we want to do within our communities to make change. So we cover a very wide array of things, and in the process, I think most of the time students find that they develop a really amazing network with their fellow participants and create a pretty close community.
Yeah, I've seen such personal evolutions through this course and all the permaculture courses that I have taught, mostly with you, Adam, but certainly here at Crimpy with this 2-week intensive, people who leave their lives for 2 weeks and put on this other lens of viewing the world, and there's tears and there's joy and there's anger and there's pushing against edges and pushing against our own edges, societal edges, all these different things. And it's really beautiful to witness the powerful changes and opening that occurs at those things. And you have this term, which I think is always appropriate, this drinking from a fire hose. Like, there's so much information coming at you that you're just trying to kind of keep up with it. And it's this, we all want to give so much information and all the possibilities in the world, and to see which parts of that each different student come away with and take into their lives has been really beautiful to see.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And like I said, it's such an honor to be a part of, and always fun to have you join me for part of it.
My pleasure. We have about a minute and a half, but I want to just dive in for 1 second really shallowly into this idea of the less bad you mentioned. And this I see a lot with wild places and the way that we think that the best way to repair wild places is to just get out of them. And we've been as a species in these wild places and so integrated with them in such a healthy and balanced way over most of our evolutionary time, that I definitely feel differently that getting out of a place is not necessarily the best use of our skills as a human who is so inspired by these wild places.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, most of us born and raised here in the U.S., I think it's fair to say, have kind of been traumatized by the land management practices that are all around us. And because, you know, 99.5% of what we see around us is extractive, it leads us to think that that's the only way that humans can relate to the land. But fortunately, there are other examples once we start seeking them out. Certainly starting with the way many indigenous cultures have managed land for thousands of years, but also moving on up to the present day and lots of innovative new things happening to show that it's actually not the best thing for us to just walk away from the wild, that actually things like annual prescribed burns and, buffalo hunts and, any number of careful foraging techniques multiplied over thousands of years can act on ecosystems in a transformative way, but that's transformative in a positive way, that can actually make that ecosystem more resilient, more strong, more biodiverse than it would have been had humans never been there. So this idea that the best thing we can do for nature is to just get away and let it do its own thing, I think is actually a misconception.
Great. Well, on that note, will you give your email one more time for our listeners in case they need some more information from you?
You bet. It's Adam, ADAM, @youngfarmers.org.
great. And if you're interested in the Crimpy Permaculture Design Course starting soon with just a few spots, please go to crmpi.org and send out an email. Thanks for listening to the Living Permaculture Show. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
And my pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Great. Have a great day, and we will see everyone next month.